Welcome to a new episode of the Tennis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm Gianluca Sola. I'm very excited about this episode. I get to interview and chat with Bogdan Obradovic. Bogdan is tennis coach from Serbia, legendary coach from Serbia. He is part of the GPTCA, that's the Global Professional Tennis Coaching Association. He's one of the few that is an A-star level coach. There aren't that many. It's actually a who's of coaches that are part of that. He's also the Serbian president of the GPTCA. He's basically worked with all the top Serbian players you can think of, top 100 and top 50. He's worked with, for example, Janko Tipsarevic, Novak Djokovic, Boris Pazanski, and Nedant Zimonic. He's got his own academy in Belgrade, and but probably he's most famous for captaining the Serbian Davis Cup team between 2007 and 2017. And during that time, he actually won the Davis Cup with Serbia in 2010 and also reached another final. The other thing he's very famous for is obviously he worked with Djokovic. He worked in his formative years as a junior between 10 and 20 years old. And he's also a mentor to Djokovic. So in this episode, we talk about his tennis journey. We talk about Serbian tennis. We talk about his time being the captain of the Davis Cup team. And we also discuss a lot his relationship with Djokovic. It's really fascinating. I think he is a real character. He speaks his mind. I found it a great, great chat. He gave us lots of insights into Djokovic and Serbian tennis. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. And yeah, thanks. Ciao, ciao. Bye. Hi.
Hey, Gianluca. Hi.
Hi, hi. Can you hear me well?
Yes, very good.
Fantastic. Bogdan, thank you very much for coming on my podcast. I must say I'm very excited to have you. Yeah, I just wanted to know, how are things? What are you doing in Belgrade? Are you still able to coach with the COVID and things like that? How is the situation right now?
Generally, the situation is quite stable, which means we are practicing normally. Even during the COVID, let's say that bad time, isolation, everything, I was working with my kids and I practice. Because the gyms did not allow to work. But, you know, the tennis is like COVID sport, which means two or four kids in the big court, big indoor. So you don't have any problem with virus, okay? So this is why they let us to practice. And now we start even with some junior tournaments here in Belgrade. So actually, COVID is still here, but we manage how to keep ourselves safe and to continue to work normally.
Ah, fantastic, fantastic. I want to make a brief introduction. The person who you're listening to is Bogdan Obradovic. Did I say that right?
Good, very good.
Okay. Bogdan is a GPTCA, which is a Global Professional Tennis Coach Association, A-star level coach. He is the Serbian president of the GPTCA. Yes. From 2007 to 2017, you were the captain of the Serbian Davis Cup team. Which had a lot of success. Obviously, your biggest success was winning the Davis Cup in 2010. Right. You've worked with many players, Janko Tipsarevic, Novak Djokovic, Boris Pazanski, and Nenad Zimonic, just to name a few. I hope I'm getting these names right, the pronunciation.
Very good.
Very good. So
And I believe, do you still have your own academy in Belgrade?
That's
Is that
right.
where you work from?
Yes.
Okay. It's your and what is that called?
Well, my tennis academy is actually at Ada Cigalia, that is the resort in between the river and the lake. So it's really beautiful. It's kind of island. We have so many different variety of the sports, which is football and basketball, volleyball, rowing, all the sports, you know. Even we have golf course with 9 holes and so many things. And the whole city of the sport, let's say, it's really big. It's more than 200 acres, and it's really, really beautiful, you know. This is, I think, one of the best centers in the whole Europe, you know, because it's really beautiful with a beautiful lake, which is 4 kilometers wide, and it's really, really beautiful.
Ah, fantastic. Wow. And how far from Belgrade is that?
It is just in the middle of the Belgrade. From the city center is just 3.5 kilometers, which is walking distance.
Oh, okay.
So this
is
this one of the most beautiful, parts of the Europe, let's say.
Okay.
Who wants to see, he can go on the internet, see Ada Cigalia, and then you will see the resort. It's really, really beautiful.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, wow. How many courts do you have?
I have 5 outdoor courts, clay courts, and I have 2 indoor hard courts, US Open surface. And I have 1 part in my indoor, which is for fitness, and this is it. But, you know, the piece of land that I have surrounding my academy, I can build up even more courts. So in the future, maybe I will make even more.
Okay, fantastic. There's a million questions I have for you, but I will try and keep it short, or less than a million. But obviously, one of the things I'm very, very, very interested in is your relationship also with Novak Djokovic.
Yes.
Would it be true to say you were kind of a mentor when he was a kid, like a junior? What was your involvement with him when he was a kid or a junior?
I met Novak when he was 10 years old. His father knows me, and then he bring Novak when he was a very small kid just to see, you know, how he play, okay? So after that, I start to work with Novak when Novak was 13 until he was, let's say, 19, which means almost 6 or 7 years in a row. And that was actually the period of time that was maybe the crucial period of time, you know, to develop the technique, movement, everything what actually now he's having in his pocket, let's say. So I don't know. And after that, when he turned 19, then I become also the Davis Cup captain. And then we stretched that period of time working in, when he was junior in the professional, and me as the Davis Cup captain. So that was also very important, because the energy that Novak was picking up during the Davis Cup matches was very important for his individual career. After 2010, actually, Novak made that breakthrough with 45, 6 wins in a row, which means, you know, this was actually the moment when he, let's say, took that, rising energy, you know, in his individual career. And that was actually the breaking point of his career.
That's amazing. I mean, to be honest, it must be so amazing to be able to say that Djokovic, who arguably is maybe one of the greatest, if not will be the greatest player of all time, and you had a crucial input in his development. That must be that's amazing. I mean, that is incredible. But where did your tennis journey start? When did you start with tennis, and where?
You know, I start as a kid when I was 6 years old in the part when I used to live, that is New Belgrade, and actually that was the Communist Party ruling country, which was Yugoslavia. My father was a soldier, and they actually pick up all, let's say, natives from the ex-Yugoslavia, which is from Bosnia, Herzegovina, then from Slovenia, then from Macedonia, from Croatia, all over. And they took them, and all of them, they put them in New Belgrade. That was the new rising city, the new part of the Belgrade. And many kids actually came with with them, which means in the industrial part, which was growing up at that time, economics, everything was growing up. Okay, so of course a lot of laborers was coming up to the Belgrade, and the city was becoming bigger and bigger, and of course because of a lot of families, that was there was a lot of kids on the street, playing all the sports. And then if you have on the TV world championship in the football, everybody's playing football. If you have basketball, everybody's playing basketball. Volleyball, everybody's playing volleyball. Athletics, everything. Okay. And this is the time actually when in Yugoslavia start to notice something which was tennis. And our television was just only one match, which was the final match of the Wimbledon. And mostly that was like John McEnroe and Borg, yeah?
Borg.
Yes, and yeah. He was watching that match. And as a kid, my father was watching that also because he used to like tennis. And then in front of my apartment, we start to play tennis, but on the volleyball field. We put some kind of net. We find some woody rackets, like airplane rackets or some really... Woodstock racket was some Russian metal racket that was very heavy, like 489 grams. You cannot even hold that racket. How was it heavy? And we start to play tennis. Nobody was teaching us, literally nobody. We just play on the street like the kids are playing football in Brazil. On the beach.
Okay.
Who is teaching them? Nobody. You just play, and this is it. And this is actually how I start. So after a couple of years, I went to the Red Star, famous club at that time. And now it's a famous club also. We have two clubs actually in Serbia. That is Crvena Zvezda, Red Star, or Partizan. And this is it. So I went in Red Star and I start to play tennis. I was having a good junior career. That was
football. Sorry to interrupt. Very famous football clubs.
Yes, famous football club. Yeah. Yes, and basketball club also. And then I start to practice there. I played so many, junior tournaments. When I was 17, I moved to city named Kikinda. That was in Vojvodina. Mm. That is that north part of Serbia. And then I start also with that club to be the coach, and also because I was the oldest one, and we start to play the league tennis. So we was the fourth division. In the 4 years, we passed all of those divisions, and finally we come in the first league, which was in ex-Yugoslavia, really good result. And that was actually the starting point of crushing my, let's say, professional career in tennis, and secondly, starting to be the coach. So when I was 17, already I start to be the coach. I didn't have money to travel for some, professional tournaments at that time. I was from some average family, which means we have for the food, but not for tennis. And that was it. And this is how I started to work as a coach.
Okay, amazing. And so you were basically self-taught, but and you were also a player. Did you ever try and become professional or try your tennis?
I was playing so many matches against the guys who was like top 200 in the world at that time, because I was doing some clinics on the coast in Croatia and Slovenia with some, at that time, famous coaches, because they organized those clinics for some professional players. But I didn't play the tournaments. The reason was very simple, money. I didn't have money to travel, to play the hotel, everything, for the coach, nothing. This is why I was the sparring partner. But I played with many, many really good players, and mostly I beat all of them. My level was probably top 100 in the world at that time, but I didn't play the tournaments. That was my
A sponsor. You needed to get the sponsor.
I was really crushing some really good guys, and they also cried. They are like, come on, this guy is beating me, he doesn't have any ranking, but I was really good.
Okay, that's amazing. The other thing is, so when is there a moment that you decided, now I just want to be a coach, a tennis coach?
When I start with Kikinda, when I was 17 years old, 18, I already start to be the coach. So I start to work also with some younger kids. And this is when I start. But that is just a love of the tennis, because I didn't have any conditions to play tennis in Belgrade, because it was very expensive. This is why I move in Kikinda, which was much cheaper for me. There I played the league tennis and I was working as a coach. My only idea was just to stay on the court and to play tennis. And this is actually the point. Nothing besides that. I never think about any kind of big money or some big results, nothing. I was just playing tennis for fun, for love of the sport, and this is it. Nothing besides that.
Okay. Okay. Well, so when did you start to, I mean, going back to Novak, as you said, around 10-13, did you, what would happen? How many days would you train with him? Was he in a group? What sort of training would you do with him?
I was practicing with Novak when I started to practice with him every day, twice a day, when he was 13. And I also, at that time, started to practice with Pashansky. But Pashansky was 5 years older than Novak. Novak was, let's say, 13. Pashansky was already 18. Which means time was really tough, you know, to match them together, because Pashansky was, let's say, complaining like, I don't want to play with some kid and stuff like that. But I convinced him that Novak, when he was 13, was much better than all the guys that was at that time in Belgrade under 18. Which means, you know, and this is how I convinced him, and then we worked together. And that was actually the point. The point was actually that I bring to Novak all the best players at that time who was much older than him, and he was doing all of those practices with the best older guys from Serbia to practice with him. That was actually the crucial, let's say, decision by me why Novak was catching that older generation every time. When he became 17, he was already ready to play professional tournaments. Then he played one future tournament in my club when I was working with Novak. He lost with the wild card first round future. And then the second tournament in Red Star in my club, he was playing also with the wild card, and he won that tournament with the wild card. And actually, that was the starting point of his professional career.
And then he started. By the way, Pashansky, I mean, was not just any player. I think he was about 55 in the world.
He was 55, the best, And he was the only player in the history of tennis that he won 8 challengers in one season.
Okay. Oh,
so
wow.
That is really amazing result. I think that nobody to achieve that ever.
Ever. That's amazing. And how did these people come to you? Was it just because it was a very good tennis club?
I was just a very hard worker, okay? And I was somebody who was, before I started to work with Novak, I was traveling with Nenad Zimonjić on the professional tour. So Nenad was, at that time, he was practicing with the best guys like Marcelo Rios, Guga Kuerten, Patrick Rafter, Leighton Hewitt, Marat Safin, Evgeny Kafelnikov, Pete Sampras, Andre Agassi, all the best and the number ones in the world. So I was really somebody who was on the professional tour, but I never, during the tournament, went to the hotel. I was all the time at the tournament, spending time in the locker room, talking with the players, talking with the coaches, watching the matches. So I was having so much experience, you know, from the locker room of the professional tournaments. And at that time, then I stopped traveling with Nenad and I start to work with Novak. And I give to the Novak all the fresh informations about the professional tennis and that moment, which was really, really, you know, so valuable, you know, for Novak in that moment.
Okay. Was he a kid that, I noticed with juniors, there are some that you say something, but it sort of goes in an ear and goes out the other. And there are others that you just have to say it once and they immediately apply it. Was he that sort of kid, I imagine?
Not just that. I think that Novak was even 3 times faster, you know. Novak is so much motorically intelligent that if you show him and he just sees the motion, he can repeat that and he immediately transfer that in his game. After that, you tell him, okay, you have to practice this. And then if I give him another day to play the points, already I can see that he accept that part of the technique, playing the points, which is the most difficult. You know, the only thing that you can see the difference in between the junior kids is what you're doing during the practice when they start to play the points. They switch on the last one, which was the bad one. And that is actually how you notice who is talent. If you ask me who is talent, this is talent. Talent is when somebody was taught how to do the technique and then he start to play points, immediately he accept that technical point and he start to play the point.
Okay.
And this is it. That was the Novak. Novak was a genius of accepting all the new things immediately.
Okay, that's very interesting. So I noticed that, yeah, so he took it and immediately put it into practice. Yeah,
which means you cannot make a good pie with the shit. This is what we say in Serbia.
Okay.
You need a good cheese, you need a good meat, okay? You cannot make a pie with the shit.
Okay. And that's very interesting. The other thing is, during practices and things like that, was there a big challenge technically, something that he had to work a lot on as a kid, or was he kind of a bit good at everything?
He was practicing with me, you know, every day, twice a day tennis, which was 4 hours of tennis.
Yeah.
In between, he was doing fitness. And this is it.
This was
actually our recipe, what even now, in this moment, I'm doing with my junior kids. Twice a day, tennis, plus fitness, which means 3 practices per day, and this is it.
No, but what I mean, did he maybe have a stroke, like a forehand or a serve? Yeah. Was there something that was very challenging to get
it? Everything is the same like now. Yeah. He was struggling with the serve all the time. Then I noticed that he is not going to be the good server at all. His serve is average in this season. But the balance in between his forehand and backhand is almost the same. And that's the point. If you see, let's say, the difference in between Rafa, between Roger Federer and Novak, you can notice very easily they don't have the balance in between forehand and backhand the same like Novak. Roger is much better with his forehand. His backhand is struggling. And then the Rafa has got something which is in between, which means in some moments his forehand and backhand is really good, but in some moments he's making so many mistakes that you cannot even explain what is going on there. And in the different surfaces, if you, let's say, develop your technique, that means that the power in between your forehand and backhand has to be the same on every single surface. So the problem with Rafa is not balance in between forehand and backhand. It is the balance in between the surfaces when you're counting that between grass or hard court, indoor or clay court. He's supreme on the clay court. But on the hard court or indoor, he is not that much good. Novak is the same.
Okay.
He fights with Rafa much harder on the clay court, which means it's not easy for Rafa to beat him on the clay court like it is for Novak to beat him on the hard court or indoor. Or let's say grass.
Okay.
So Rafa is extremely good. He's very close to the Novak, but if you're comparing the body, which means how much he's going to stretch his career because he needs to stay healthy, Rafa is going to have a problem. Novak is now like he's 17 years old, which means his body is with no injuries, he's completely safe, and I don't know how many years in the future he's going to play the tennis. If he makes decision, I think Novak can play next 10 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, physically, it seems like he can probably play another easily 7-8 years. Probably the challenge there will be if he has the motivation.
Yes, that's the point. I said when the journalists are asking me what I think about some tournament, before the tournament, what Novak is going to do, I said, listen, he doesn't have anybody who is going to beat him if Novak wants to play his best tennis. Novak developed the way of moving of the court, preparing for the match, playing the match tactically, what he's doing from the baseline, all of that. And even now he's improving his serve and attacking game. It's almost impossible to beat him. When you count the percentage, actually, you have to play your best tennis in the moment when you're playing against Novak. So normally for the human beings, mostly you're 70 to 80% ready. But against Novak, you have to be ready 100% to beat him. And the question is, are you ready really 100% in the semi-final or final match to beat Novak? Very tough. And this is what actually happened with Medvedev in the final match of Australian Open. Medvedev was beating everybody 20 matches in a row, winning without losing the match. And he lost easily in three sets against Novak. Why? Because he was playing good tennis. But that was like, from Medvedev, that was 75%. Maybe even 80%. But that was not enough to beat Novak. This is why he lost three love final sets.
Yeah, but do you think, I obviously watched that match, and I don't know, maybe you don't agree, but one thing I noticed about Novak is the first set we know was very close. But at a certain point, you know, Medvedev, he likes to go side to side. He has a big reach, and he likes hitting the ball when he's moving, etc. And it seemed to me, I don't know if it was done on purpose, that he was hitting a lot more balls down the middle and telling him, okay, now you start to play. You start to be aggressive. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. But it seemed like he nearly did that on purpose.
You know, so what is actually the point? The point is Medvedev is playing extremely fast. He's playing like 5 meters behind from the baseline and he's hitting the ball very fast. So Novak was noticing that it was very hard for him to make him run, okay? And this is actually what he was doing. He was hitting the balls through the middle. So when he adapts into the game that he can manage to hit the balls that Medvedev is hitting to the Novak, which is the hard ball, it is a hard top spin. So that was not, you know, most of the people who are saying about the Medvedev, they're saying that he's hitting flat, even Mats Wilander. But, you know, everybody knows that you cannot hit the flat. That is hard top spin, which means it is a lot of rotation, but the ball flies through the air very fast. Okay? So, technically and tactically, what you can do against that player? You have to hit that ball back, which means you are not able to hit that ball left or right, which means to make some kind of placement. You can hit the ball through the middle. But then if you manage how to hit those balls through the middle, because then you start not making that much mistakes, then even Medvedev cannot hit that ball in the corner left or right. And also he needs to play more balls through the middle. So the change for Novak was actually to hit those balls that he's hitting through the middle, that he can then start to change the tactical approach, which means that was much easier for Novak to hit left and right. You know, if you are very fast cross court, it's really tough to change the ball down the line. Everybody knows that. And you're going to miss. And actually, you don't have the solution. The only solution is hit through the middle. And then you wait him to start to hit through the middle. Then you will see completely different tennis. You know, this is actually not easy. It's very tough to hit the ball, you know, in the corner when somebody is hitting hard ball through the middle. Because every single ball starts to go exactly into your body. You need to move your body left and right to skip that ball, okay, and to hit it somewhere. That is not easy. And this is what Novak is actually is using. You know, Medvedev is playing actually the same tennis like Andy Murray was playing against Novak, which means very fast balls. And he was managing to beat Novak a couple of times. But, you know, it's tough for you to play that kind of tennis. It's not easy because the percentage of that game is very low. So, you know, and that is the only option how you can beat Novak. But if he managed to hit that ball back, you're dead, you know. You cannot win the match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Look, going back, everybody knows Novak, mostly one of the many good things he does, but maybe the most famous thing is his movement. Was he doing anything specific as a youngster, as a kid, for his movement? Some people say because he was skiing a lot for the balance. I don't know all this. Or was he just doing normal kind of fitness?
Gianluca, nobody was coming to see what I was doing with Novak. Even now, I'm working also with Hamad Medjedovic, who is the top junior in the world. But it's a really shame, you know. I really don't understand. You know, the problem is tennis, actually, that everybody was developing some kind of the systems, okay? And I didn't use any kind of the system. I was just using all the natural things. What does it mean? It means that in the physical part, we was doing plyometrics, jumping over some boxes. I use all the tires from the car, you know, the tires. So he was jumping in between, on, over them, blah, blah. And I use elastic ropes. Those elastic ropes actually are good because I didn't use any kind of the weights. Then we used gymnastics, which is very simple things like medicine ball and stuff like that, okay?
Okay. So,
just
so
all of those very simple things. But the movement on the court what Novak was doing was just the only reason why he developed those things what he's doing on the court. The only reason is because I put him to play with much older guys. Then those older guys, they are hitting the ball that's much harder that even after the first ball, they put Novak in defensive position. From this defensive position, Novak was trying to attack them. So they make you to stretch, they make him to slide on every single surface. Novak was playing during the winter time on the surface, which is carpet. On the carpet, it's almost impossible to slide. Novak was flying even on that surface. Can you imagine that?
Okay.
So
wow.
This is actually how we developed his movement, was actually giving him the guys who are five or 6 or 7 years older, they hit much harder and they put Novak in the stretching position. And that was it.
Okay.
But then I explained to Novak, listen, from that stretching position, defensive position, you have to hit the ball. So try to hit. If you go defensive with the position, you slide, don't hit stupid squash, which means that ball is very slow. Everybody will hit easy volley and they will win the point. So try to stretch and try to hit the ball. And then they are going to have much harder volley to hit back, or they are not even going to attack him because from that position, he is going to be able to hit the ball. And this is it.
Okay.
That's very simple. All right. This is why he developed, you know, even now, Novak was practicing a few months ago in his club. I was with some junior players from my academy. They practiced with Novak. And Novak was, after one point, he was coming up back to me. Marian Vajda was there also. And he said, Boča, listen, because that's my nickname, Boča. He said, Boča, listen, this is defending all the time. I'm surviving every single time. How many years? He was, you know, laughing, you know. That is a very specific, you know, part of his natural game. Because he was defending, because all of his life, he was playing against the guys who was trying to kill him, you know. And then you say, how you cannot kill him? Because he's that kind of the bird that he's so fast, the guy who is shooting with his gun cannot reach with his eyes how the bird is flying fast, you know. And this is it's very simple, you know. Just put him in that situation. You cannot develop that through the drills. Stupid American drills. No, there is no drill. Let him play points, put him in defensive position playing against, you know, strong guys.
But
this is it.
Okay. I'm definitely not going to disagree with you because you know much more than me. But don't you think there is a lot more to it? Because there is millions. There is a lot of people who just put kids in groups where the group is much stronger. So, but they might not become an extremely good player or just as a good player.
The only thing is this, what they are saying to their kids. What they are doing. So they are making the copy of that system, which also recognize many decades in the past. But I'm telling you, I was saying to Novak, fight with them and try to hit the ball. Be aggressive from defensive position. This is what I'm telling you. So okay. I think that those coaches who are not making this, they cannot make the success with their players. So there is that kind of chemistry that you're actually developing in the mind of your player. Be aggressive from defensive, you know, position.
Okay. I see what you mean.
Coaches are not doing that because I was observing and watching many coaches working all over the world, and I didn't see that somebody was doing that. They are doing that, but not the same way like I was doing with Novak. If they don't believe me, they can come over with their players to my academy, and then I can work with their players, and they will see what is the difference. I'm not saying that I'm a genius. I'm just telling you that everybody was saying, oh, you are lucky because the Novak is the only one. Then I developed that in Janko. He was number 8 in the world. I developed that in Victor. He was number 12 in the world. And then we developed that in our players with that technology, with that kind of thinking, what they have to do on the court, that now in this moment we have 5 players from Serbia in top 50 in the world. So nobody can tell me you're lucky. We are not lucky. We know what to do.
Yeah.
That's the point.
That's okay. That's amazing. That is amazing.
The result is saying by himself. Okay. I'm not saying that. The result is saying, okay. If I'm wrong.
So you have 5. You have 5 kids now in the top 50 in the world.
That's right. You know, Kecmanović is in top 50. Lajović is in top 50. Krajinović is in top 50. Jared Laszlo was in top 50. You know, Novak is in top 50. He's number 1. Yeah, so I'm just telling you, we have 5 players. And in and total, we have 8 players who was in the top 50 in the world. So, and we are 6 million people country. Can you imagine that? We have Gianluca.
We have talk about two later.
Yeah. We have just 2,000 kids who are playing tennis in the whole Serbia. So from 2,000 kids, we have.
I want to touch on that later, Bogdan. Yeah. Sorry, I just want to finish with. Okay, that is amazing. I want to finish with Novak, but I want to talk about Serbia and that later. If you have time, I won't be long. But just one last thing. What is the most important quality you look for in a junior player? Is there one thing you look for?
Just one thing. When I took the kid, he needs naturally to be the good competitor.
Okay.
So you have 7 years. You have 7 years old kid. Okay, he's playing tennis, and he knows forehand or backhand, good or bad or this or that. It doesn't matter. Just give him to play the points.
Okay.
And this is it. And, so, believe me, that is the only thing. What I'm saying, you cannot make the pie with the shit, which means if he's a good competitor, he's got the chance to develop the technique, his body, and he can become a professional tennis player. If he's not a good competitor, which means even from the beginning, he cannot beat the rest of the guys, he cannot be in the top 100 in the world. 100%.
Okay.
This is it.
One final thing on Djokovic, then I swear I'll stop
That's
it.
That's okay.
But I mean, you don't get to talk to somebody who knows him very well often. But if you think the normal viewing public really, to be honest, sees Djokovic as a bit of a controversial figure. For example, I'm not saying I agree or not. I'm not just saying. But I mean, let's say, for example, his views on vaccination, his behavior during the pandemic, he hit the lineswoman at the US Open. He creates the Professional Tennis Player Association, his diet, his spirituality, yoga, blah, 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 blah. It seems that when he does something, he has very good intentions. But somehow, often, it backfires. Why is that? And how is he really as a person?
You know, as a person, he is extremely nice person. He is very funny. He likes to talk with the people. He wants to get fun or all of that stuff. But secondly, with many of those things, I, as a coach, as his coach and the Davis Cup captain, I didn't agree. And even in this moment now, actually, I fight so many times with Novak about his statements, okay? But, you know, this is Novak. Okay. And this is actually the natural way of the behavior, you know, from one person to each person, which means you can say whatever you want. But if I'm your good friend, I'm going to tell you, for me, you're an idiot. And this is it. If you don't like it, don't call me anymore to be the friend of yours. I mean, I don't care. And this is it. You know, in the Serbia, we don't have that problem, which means, you know, everybody is saying to everybody, if you're a really good friend, if you want to help somebody, if you're making some stupid things, you just say open in the face, listen, you're stupid. And this is it. So Novak was not having a good time with me, which means I never pet him like, you know, Novak, I like you so much. You're so smart. You know, so many times I said, listen, for me, you're stupid. And this is it. So, you know, the people actually are choosing. But I really don't know why everybody wants to change Novak. This is Novak. This is his behavior. This is his state of mind, which means, of course, this is it, you know. But he's not affecting anybody that he's going to kill nobody.
Yeah.
He's not Adolf Hitler. Yeah. He's not,
No, for sure.
But... The Jack, the guy who is killing the women in the London, you know, the butcher. Or
Jack
that's right. He's just a normal person. You know? If you don't like him, change the channel or just don't listen to him, okay? But if you are watching
I agree.
There, he's saying just one word. That is the word of the sport. After that, if he's a gay, if he's a faggot or he's idiot, whatever, who cares for that? Huh? But you know, for me,
I agree with you.
With that, he's okay. His opinion is, I don't want to take vaccine. I don't want to take this. Even now, in this moment, so many people are saying, even I don't want to take vaccine. So, you know, the people are choosing by themselves. The medical staff is saying it is by you if you want to take the vaccine or not. So how can you say everybody needs to take the vaccine? There is millions of the people that they cannot take the vaccine because of the heart disease, brain disease, cancer, all of that stuff, which means he's right. So make your decision with your doctor, with yourself. Why you're actually saying to Novak that this is not right, you know, and then he's anti-vaccine or stuff like that. No, he just said his opinion and this is it.
That's amazing. Now, you know, for me, he comes across like many famous or not famous, legendary sports people that are genius. It comes to mind Maradona, controversial, but the greatest. Mike Tyson, controversial, but, you know, one of the greatest. He falls a bit into that category for me. And maybe there is a reason why these people are like that as well. But do you think he wants to be loved by the public as much as Roger and Rafa?
You know, everybody was actually pushing the Novak to try to improve, did the people like him or not, you know. But what I'm going to tell you, even Maradona was the great football player, but he was taking drugs. I was seeing, you know, Michael Jordan, who is the one of the best, you know, basketball players ever, okay? But, you know, he likes to smoke those big cigars from Cuba, okay?
Cigars.
And he's saying this is really good. Yeah. What he's saying actually with that, Maradona was taking drugs for the young people, for the, you know, rising superstars in football. This is not a good information. This is not good. Even Michael Jordan, who is taking cigars, it is not good for the kids because he's going to say, oh, you take the cigar also, okay? Novak is not doing that. Novak is taking his diet. He's saying some really soft things that cannot affect badly nobody, not even the kids, not even the older generations, which means he's very soft. But, you know, the Western countries, media, they don't like him because he's going to become the best of best ever. The greatest of all time.
Okay.
But, you know, probably they have...
Do you think he's going to win more slams than Roger and Rafa?
Probably
do you think
they have
a
problem with that. Then they make all of this atmosphere around the Novak that even Novak wants everybody to like him. He doesn't like that. Really, believe me. He never spoke anything about that subject. And I can see, honestly, in his face, in his mind, in his soul, if he has some problem, I will talk with him about that problem. But that kind of problem, he doesn't have in his mind. Believe me, he doesn't have. So, you know, that is just kind of media. You know, the people are saying so many stupid things that who cares for that? You know, nobody is going to take care about that. But I really don't know.
Okay, now just moving on to something different. I want to ask you, Serbia. Okay, I'm from Italy, but we are close. But I also had many Serbian friends, actually. But anyway, it's a very small country and with a small population. But somehow it produces, not only in tennis, but in all sports, really, or in lots of sports, very successful athletes.
Yes.
I want to know from you, like, why is that? And do you think... This is what maybe I think a little bit, but do you think it has a lot to do also because of the genetics? I know Serbians are very athletic, tall, they are physically strong. Do you think it's also got to do with the mind and the war and things like that? Why is it? Why do you produce so many good sports athletes?
You know, you're right. You know, the Serbian people, genetically, we are very high and we are very strong. And this is something which is coming from the... so many centuries in the past that there were so many armies coming through this part of the Balkan, which means the, you know, the soldiers from the West countries, the East countries. We are actually in the middle of the East and the West. Okay, so looking up to the genetically from the Romans, which was from Italy, through the Ottoman Empire from Turkey, and then after that with this last one, Austrian-Hungarian Empire, was so many, you know, soldiers and the people getting involved in our genetical code, okay? Which is, you know, so many nations, which is normal for this part of the Balkan. But secondly, as you look up to the old Yugoslavia, the situation was even better in between the nations, which is from Slovenia to Macedonia. So many different kind of people was there, and mentally and physically and with the culture and everything. So that mix up means that the flavor after that is going to be supreme. If you eat the ice cream from Italy, you can see the people are matching so many different you know, things inside that you can see now the final flavor is really beautiful. If you take pizza, the pizza, you have so many kind of things that you're putting on it that the flavor is really superb. Okay, and this is why you're good in that.
Okay.
And also in Italy, it's really good with the west part of Italy and the, you know, that south part of Italy. Yeah, the mixing between that genes are actually really superb. This is why you're also very good in the sport. But mostly you're lazy, which means you want to make the money, but you don't want to work very hard. And this is it. This is how we look up to the Italy. Okay, in France, got something a little bit different, but this is it. But actually, the mental part is the most important in the sport. What does it mean? It means that there is the one cartoon, actually, from the Italy, that is Alan Ford. You know Alan Ford? So the Alan Ford was made actually in Italy. But the only country that was using Alan Ford as something which is the part of the culture is Yugoslavia and especially Serbia. Okay? In Alan Ford, you have the group of the people who lives in New York and they are doing any kind of improvisation and smuggling how to make the money. That means that live on the streets, no rules, okay? And this is the most important part when you come in the way of how you're going to use professional sport. You have professional athlete, he's using all the knowledge which comes from the experience, from the books, from the science. But secondly, you see that there is one important part, which is the part from the street. On the street, you are actually using some different kind of the tactical approaches, which means smuggling. I'm going to cheat you, to look up to your face. You ask me, did you take my apple from my tree? I said, I didn't, but I did. Then I come to Trieste. Yeah. In Trieste, you have jeans. I take jeans for 50 Deutschmarks, five of them. Then I come to Belgrade and I sold them for five times better price. And then I make money. And this is what actually the Serbians are doing. We are doing all the things that the Western countries, they have on the plate. You're using your countries because you're supreme. You have everything. You have money, everything. We don't have that. How are we going to do it? Improvisation. We cannot make the jeans, but Italy is making the jeans. Then we come to the Italy, we buy the jeans, and we sold them in Serbia or some other countries. And this is it. So this is actually the this is actually the situation where the improvisations comes over the technology of the science. Novak is somebody who was raised by that philosophy of Alan Ford. If you know what is Alan Ford, then you will see what is the point. And this is it, you know.
Okay. Very interesting. Do you think, is there, like every country, there is some similarities in their coaching styles. In Serbia, would you say everybody works a bit on their own independently, or is there a coaching system that is like very Serbian that you can immediately see?
Tell you that, you know, our system is actually that the system does not exist. What does it mean? It means, you know, I'm going to tell you just one example. You know, there is 15 of the professional guys who are actually, you know, working in the Belgrade Philharmonia, which means they are very professional, and they are doing the concert of Beethoven, okay? And there is a couple of gypsy guys who are also doing some of the music, gypsy music, the stuff like that, and mostly they are also playing the kind of music which is kind of the jazz, okay? And then I sit with a friend of mine. Okay. We just sit with them, with the gypsy guys. And we said, what do you think about those Philharmonia guys, how they play their instruments? They said, oh, they play really nice, but they make so many mistakes. And we are like laughing, but listen, this is Beethoven. How can they make the mistake? But in the ear of those gypsy guys who are improvising, they're saying, listen, we will play that, but not that way. We want to improvise, you know. So what I'm telling you, the sport is becoming something which is almost the same. Everybody is trying to do the science way, which means they are trying to develop the system. And you have jazz. Jazz doesn't have a system. Jazz have something which is, okay, we are playing something, but there is so many improvisation. Do you understand me? That's the part. The part of the system of the Serbian sport is so many individual improvisation. And then you have a very good result. If you ask me, can I repeat that again? I will tell you I cannot repeat it. I'm going by my inspiration. When I come up to the court, I start to work with the kids, but I never think before that any kind of program what I'm going to work with them. I'm just working with my internal improvisation. What I start to feel, then I start to work on the court.
Instinct.
That's right.
Instinct. You won the Davis Cup as a captain and you got to another final. What do you think of the new format, the new Davis Cup format? Do you like it?
Why? Because they changed the system, the old system with the new system, and they change it just because of stupid money. So the last one was developed through the improvisation. ITF start with that 100 years ago. And they develop year by year the system which was accepted with all the countries in the world. Am I right? 147 countries was playing that competition. Every time, once when you play against some team, you're playing in your country. Another time, you're playing in the country in another one. Okay. So this is it. You know, that is actually mixing up. So if we play against Uzbekistan, first time we will play in Serbia. Next time we will play in Tashkent. That's the point. How we are going actually the spread disease, which is disease of the tennis, is actually doing that. ITF was using Davis Cup to spread the idea of the tennis, and also the superheroes like Novak or Rafa or Roger from their countries through the Davis Cup playing for your nation, which was actually the best way how to develop, you know, let's say the new idols of the kids who are starting to play tennis. They will see them, and if you ask the players, if you play for your Davis Cup team, you will do 300%. If you play the final match of your Grand Slam, you will do 100%, but not 300%, which means it is extremely special. Everybody will fight for his nation 300%. And then it is much, much, let's say, it is really beautiful to watch those matches, what they are putting on the task, which is so much energy, the crowd who is shouting, and the whole atmosphere is really, really beautiful. You cannot put Novak playing against Roger in Wimbledon. Then you expect, you know, from the crowd, they will, you know, cheer for somebody. They don't care for Roger, because they are from England. They don't care for Novak. They care for Andy Murray. But if Andy Murray is not playing in London, the tournament is dead. I mean, it is like in the theater, you know. The tournament is okay. The crowd is okay. Yeah. But it's not the same like during the Davis Cup, believe me. And
there is not as much passion. Do you think coaching should be allowed?
It has to stay in the same system, which means work with your player, Davis Cup, it is allowed. On the professional tournaments, it's not allowed. Players by themselves go there and play your match. Why? Because there is some special kind of energy, a special kind of everything, which is two guys playing each other. And this is it. Use your brain, use your body, use your knowledge and play against that guy. Before that, I will teach you how to beat him, to do everything. During the fight, nobody can affect the game. Just go there and fight. That's right. And this is the best way. It's very cruel. It's really tough. But this is actually, that is the part of the tennis which is making tennis very, very special. If you're a Formula One driver, you have your team. Everybody is preparing the car. But the driver is in and he's driving. And this is it. You have your some like 57 circles. Go there and drive. Yeah. And nobody cares what you're going to do. Try to win. This is it.
Sure. You are also going to be a main speaker at this first World Tennis Conference, which is, organized by the Global Professional Tennis Coach Association.
Yes, I already.
It's happening at the end of the month. And
I already finished that. Give them my speech and I don't know. After the speech, maybe, probably they're going to arrest me, but I don't care.
But they are, I mean, it looks like a very interesting conference. I mean, there is the who's who of tennis. There is every single famous coach or player you can think of. You're presenting tennis from 10 to 20 years old key aspects. Why are, I don't want you to explain what you're saying, because obviously people uh-huh. must go and register and look at the presentation. But why
because
are they going
I
to arrest
Because I was saying
you?
So many things against the system, you know. That is actually the point, you know. We just let something which is the system to get in the world of the sport. Huh? And that is actually just making the money, and nothing besides that. So no, the sport is kind of the art. If you put the money in, then you're losing the art. Okay, then you're losing something which is happening in the okay. normal life on the street, in the nature, okay? So you cannot make the forest artificially. Forest is just living by the nature. So the sport is the part of the nature, okay? Who is yeah. better, he's going to win. And everything what is happening in the modern sport is mm-hmm. coming up because of the money, okay? Now you have the teams, even national teams, that they are choosing in their, let's say, teams, African guys to play, you know, for Germany. So what are you doing? What's the point? Germany yeah, or yeah. France yeah. is going to be the number one in the world in the football with the guys from Morocco, Algeria, or what are you doing? What is this for? What is that for? I really don't understand that, yeah. you know? And even now you have the stupid situations. Those guys yeah. from Algeria or Morocco, they are actually from France. This is okay for me. But I'm just telling you, are they now the moment, if they are naturally and, you know, their families are from Algeria, are they also now ready to play for Algeria? They are born in Paris, okay, or in I don't know, okay. Nice or wherever. But actually, what yeah. is the point? We are making a very stupid situation now. Why? Because in the basketball, in the football, so many sports, actually, if you are rich, if you have the money, you will pick up the guys from Argentina, Brazil, all of that, and then you're going to be Milano, you know, from Italy, and you're going to be the European champion. But where is the Italian players? Listen to me. What's the point of the sport? Do you understand me? For me, the sport is yeah, the matter. I mean, if I want to watch Milano, I want to see Italian players.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I understand. I think this is something that is many years that there is this discussion. I think at least 10, 15 years ago it started. So, yeah, I don't know. And I think in tennis also the fact that money, not only at the... there's so much to discuss about money. And the first thing is probably only the top players make a living, or top 100. And the rest, you know, you struggle. So is that good or bad? But that's another discussion. I mean, that's another topic. The last thing I want to ask you is the current ATP president, Andrea Gaudenzi, who has started maybe not the best moment now with this COVID. Do you think he's going to make a big positive
like
change
Gaudenzi.
To the tennis world?
I think
world?
That he's very smart. Or I no? like him very much as a person. And I think that he can bring something really new to the tennis. So I really support him. And I really like when the guys like him are getting involved in world of tennis. And I'm telling you, if you ask Andrea Gaudenzi about my opinion, he's going to tell you, yes, I agree with Bogdan. He's extremely good guy. I like him very much. And I know exactly that he is planning to help, first of all, to the Italian tennis, and secondly, he wants to change something in the world of tennis because the things are getting worse and worse. This is not good, you know, for tennis.
Yeah, okay. Bogdan, I don't want to keep you too long, and I must say I really enjoyed it. You are somebody who speaks your mind, and I like that. But I always finish my podcast with a quick, rapid-fire quiz. You must keep it very short. Okay, if you want to talk and elaborate, please do.
Good.
But I will ask you a lot of questions, and you can just give me a quick answer. Are you ready? Okay. What is your very tennis first ball. Memory of tennis? Define what player, type of player you are.
Attacking.
If somebody's never seen you. Thank you. If you have to pick a player that resembles the way you play, who is it?
Forehand.
Best shot. Tennis idol growing up.
What do you mean, tennis idol growing up?
Like if there is a guy or a woman that you really said when you were growing up as a kid, Jimmy you really Collins. Thought was your favorite. Okay. Current favorite player, male or female? This is obvious, but list the big three from your favorite to your least favorite.
Yeah. From now, in this moment.
Well, no. Yeah, I mean, okay. I assume then, you're going to say Novak, number one. No, okay. Big three. Novak, Federer, Nadal.
And Federer.
Okay. Best match you have ever seen? It can be a club level, junior or professional.
Ever in my life?
Yes.
Was actually the final of John McEnroe and Borg in Wimbledon.
Okay. Best tournament in the world?
Rome. Clay.
Favorite surface? What strings and tension do you use?
Head, links. And tension is 26 kilos.
Oh. I use the okay. What racket you use
now in this moment is gravity.
Okay. What is the most amazing tennis experience you have ever had? Okay. You must book a restaurant and you must invite only three players. It can be any era, any time, male or female. Which restaurant do you go to and which
male
players
and female, yes. I will invite Novak.
Anyone, it can be anything, yeah.
Pete Sampras and Steffi Graf.
And where are you going to eat?
Pizzeria in Rome.
Do you like cooking?
Italian.
Favorite food? Okay. Favorite movie?
Favorite movie is Hair. Hair, yes. That's a famous one.
Here.
From 1970. No, about the young guys who are going to Vietnam, Americans.
Oh, okay. Do you have any hobbies that are maybe a bit strange?
Not strange, but my hobby is playing guitar.
Oh, okay. Favorite
it's
singer or band?
Serbian band. It's Kiki and Pilots. Yes, Kiki and Pilots, yes.
Okay, I must look that up.
That's right.
If you have Kiki and Pilots, okay. If you have to choose city, mountain, sea,
Italy.
Or countryside, which is your favorite? No. I mean, which do you like? The city, the
so
mountain,
the name
the
of
sea,
city
or the countryside? No. Which one do you like? Do you like living in the city or in the mountains or in the sea or
I
close
like
to the sea? Which
yes.
do you prefer? City, okay. Are you superstitious? A lot of tennis players
I'm
are superstitious.
I'm the part of the Communist Party.
You're not. How many hours... How many hours do you sleep on average? Okay, that's not a lot.
Roma.
Favorite city in the world? Is tennis the most difficult sport in the world?
gymnastics.
Which one do you think is?
Oh, it's very tough.
Okay. Why?
Technically and physically, it's very tough.
Okay. Okay. If you have, you have to put in order of importance, which is the most important to the least important in tennis. Talent, technique, fitness,
mentality. And then fitness.
And then?
Technical. Then, yes.
And then talent last. Okay. If you were not involved in tennis, what would you be doing right now?
I will be a guitar player in the rock band.
In 2050, so about 30 years from now, how will tennis
almost,
look like, in your opinion?
But what I think that Chinese are going to be on the top of the tennis. Yes.
Chinese. Okay. Wow. Okay. Okay. I will give you the tennis strokes, let's say, and you tell me what you think. Or it can be a player
Sampras.
Or anything. The serve.
Novak.
Return.
Roger.
Forehand.
Wawrinka.
Backhand.
Andy Murray.
Volley.
Fognini.
Drop shot.
Novak.
Movement.
Rafa.
Mental toughness. Touch and feel.
Andy Murray. Presence what?
And presence, aura.
Yeah, yeah, aura, yeah, yeah.
Aura, like in, you know what I mean?
Okay, yeah. Novak.
Okay. I like the, I was surprised, yeah. Volley Andy Murray, but okay, that's interesting. Okay, last question, Bogdan. I really, really, really enjoyed this, thank you. But the last question is, ask yourself a question and answer
what
it.
What I'm going to do in the next 10 years? I'm going to try to develop the number one from China.
Oh, wow. Okay. Are you going to China? Going there
to
select some players? Did you tell me that?
Master Series tournament in Shanghai. And I'm going to actually to have 12 girls and 12 most talented boys, which is 9 and 10 years old. I will pick them up. And then I will do that from all the cities, from all the China. And then I will see actually how much talent they have, how good they are in the competitive way. And then I will start to work with them with a big group of the coaches. So I will make the selection of the best kids and best coaches in the
and are you
China,
going to work?
And then I will bring them also to Belgrade and they will, you know, follow that junior tour in Europe, which is under 10, 12, 14, and 16. And after that, they will play some, you know, ITF tournaments like Novak was playing when he was a junior.
Wow. So are they actually going to come and permanently move
to
Belgrade
to
or are
like
they just
going
to come to sort of...
And 3 months they are going to spend in China.
Okay.
This year, yes. Actually, I signed
and when is this starting?
Very
like
soon
now?
I will be back to Shanghai in the July and August. I will have a big training camp with the most talented kids. Then I will pick up 12 boys and 12 girls.
Okay. Wow, that's amazing. So we must probably have to be ready to
I'm
see
you, next 10 some years, number one
Chinese players
on
soon.
The world from China. You will see. You know, last time I was
really,
saying
next
that
10
for
years.
Novak,
wow.
But everybody was
okay.
saying that I'm idiot. So
okay.
Again, I'm okay with that. I don't worry, but then I'm going to be double idiot, which is okay for me also.
Okay. Okay. Bogdan, thank you very much. You sound like not only you are probably one of the most amazing coaches, but you sound like a very nice guy to be around.
Thank
it
you.
Was really nice, and I hope to speak to you soon, and maybe see next time
so
we'll
much,
talk
Luca.
About
really
the next Chinese player you have.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Thank you, Bogdan. You know, man.